Now you're talking about the flume, you said?
Yeah, they just had a flume up on, it ran out and then down like they, like it was on a sloping, the ground slope.
Right.
And they just went in right at the, where the public road crossed, and they had, there was a culvert there.
Right.
And they built this flume right up to that end of that culvert.
Right.
And then they could divert the water either not to go down the flume or down the flume.
Right.
And when they wanted to saw lumber or wood or anything else, that they even had a, they even had fixed up sort of run a washing machine and a grinder and a grinders and whatnot.
No kidding.
The water wheel was at mouth was about 12 feet across and about 2 feet wide. It was that,
right.
And had these. And what the, they came down the flume and then went down the chute. And what it does is it never turns fast.
Right.
But you've got to weight these buckets in the wheel, and so you will have, you may have 100 pounds of water in about 4 of those buckets out on a, okay, it's a 12-foot wheel, so you got, they got 6 feet of leverage.
Right.
And of course it's constantly coming. Well, then they had a great big wooden wheel with a flat belt driving a shaft. And it supplied a lot of power.
Wow.
And what's interesting is,
not to cut wood, I guess, yeah.
Well, they had to be careful, but they could cut, they could run a, I think they only had a 32-inch head saw, but they could run a head saw and a carriage. Granted, they didn't have, they just pushed the carriage through by hand.
Right.
But they saw the number.
Right, yeah, wow. That's amazing.
And it's actually, it was only just feet away from where Philip has his mill today.
Yeah, yeah. It was, yeah, it's less than that from where he has his house.
Yeah.
Now, how many schools were in the McBride area in the,
oh,
in the 50s, say?
50s. There was, of course, the one out here.
Oh, there was one that for the was, Mountain View?
Oh, yeah.
That was before the 50s, though.
Yeah, so, well, that was before the 50s.
Yeah, 40s.
We're about, how, we're north and west of the town?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how far?
This is...
was it crow flies? Seven... 7 miles,
do
I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not quite 7 miles. It's a crow fly. It's about, it was about 7 miles using the old bridge site.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're north of the north side of the river, right?
North side of the river.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Okay. There was this Mountain View school.
Right.
There was one out at the Beaver.
Okay, the Beaver where I'm camping.
Yeah, only, it was only being it this was, side of there.
Yeah.
It was. Okay. I'll tell you.
Do you know where the Mennonite school is today?
No, I'm not sure. Is there a Mennonite school up there?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mennonite school at the
Beaver. Okay, when you go leave, when you leave town,
you know where the big rock bluffs are?
Yeah, I know exactly where they are. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay, there's a house just beside those rock bluffs.
Right.
Well, right above where that house is, there was the Beaver River School.
Oh, okay, right. Now, was that for the...
That was for the Beaver. Children out around.
In that area, right.
In that area.
Right.
And then the next school was the Dunster.
Yeah.
And then there was one at Croydon. And
T. John,
and then Belmont. Right. Went that way, and then the other way, Dome Creek, and then Penny. And I'm not sure, but they're like, oh, there was one for a long time at Crescent Spur too.
It was one at the Spur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now these were 1 to 8.
And Lamming Mills.
1 to 8. Yeah. Right. Oh yeah, Lamming Mills too. They, yeah.
Right. Right.
I went to the Lamming Mills School for a while.
Yeah, it's just right across the river. It was just, well, there's still a Lamming Mills School. They still run their own church school.
Yeah. Now, you went to the Lamming Mills School?
For a short time, just 1 year.
Now?
By boat.
By boat? You crossed the river by boat?
Yeah.
Wow, from?
This side, yeah.
From about this part of where you're living, pretty much in this area? Right?
Yeah.
Go down to the river here.
Right.
No
kidding, eh?
And then you're right at 90 minutes.
So, a motorboat or a paddle across? Or?
No, actually, it was a catamaran.
Right.
It was 2 big cedar logs.
Right.
With a deck on top of them.
Right.
And we had a sweep on either end.
What's a sweep?
Well, it's a, you can paddle it or steer it with it.
Yeah, it's a big paddle.
Oh, I see. Just back and forth. Right, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Okay. And whatnot. And us boys would cross, and Dad would come down about every other day or so and pull it back upstream, because we could just barely get it across and he'd land it.
Right, yeah.
But he would come down every other day or two and take us across, and or when we came across
right
at night,
yeah,
he would pull it up to where upstream to the upper landing, and then we had a couple of days where we got down where he needed to come around, push it
up, push it back upstream again. Yeah. Now, why did you go to the Lemmy Mill School?
Because this one was closed for a short time.
Oh, it did close for a while. Okay. How long did it take you to get back and forth?
Oh,
like right to the school and I guess back home.
About an hour either way.
Well,
but when this school was open,
right,
we were only about 5 minutes from it.
Right, I see. Yeah. And if you wanted to go to high school, then
you had to. Well, when I reached grade 8,
right,
they shut this school down and started busing the kids to McBride.
So there was a ride. There was a road that would take you.
There was a road take you. Sometimes we didn't go because the bus didn't come.
Right. Yeah.
Well, because the road wasn't. Lots of times it wasn't plowed regularly in the winter.
So this was in the 50s,
even
or
still in the 50s.
Yeah.
Right.
In the 50s, they still weren't always plowing it on a regular basis.
Okay. Right.
But in the 40s and stuff. So school was going during the war years. Must have closed.
It closed about
after the war was over.
Okay.
The Mountain View School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Is the structure still down there? Or?
Yeah.
It's being used as a chicken house now.
Really?
But it's still there.
Oh, it's still away.
Yeah, it's just down at the corner of the roads here.
Oh, maybe I'll drive out that way on the way out then. Yeah. Now, I guess for social life and for dating and next question: where'd you two meet?
Of course, there was always the single girls at the hospital.
Right.
So it was not a problem meeting men because, of course, as soon as you got off the train,
right,
everybody was there to see who came off the train, because the train was an event. So right, everybody knew a moment a new girl came into town.
Right, yeah.
So that was not a problem. But for us, Jack's mother was cooking at the hospital at the time I came.
Right.
I took over the job from her because she didn't want to stay on as a cook.
Right.
And, of course, she introduced me around to all the people in the neighborhood. And in McBride and everything. And Ruth Bryant, who had lived out in Mountain View and gone to school with Jack, of course, for years.
Right.
She and I became really good friends. She was living in town at the time. And so I suppose that was how for social life, we went square dancing. Dances every weekend out at Dunster.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
I don't think there was a weekend in the summer that there wasn't a Dunster
dance.
And everybody went to a Dunster dance, and everybody still goes to Dunster dances. They're absolutely
I've heard
about the best things they're going.
I heard they go to six or years ago. You used to go to 6 or 7 in the morning.
Oh heavens! We danced till we had to go to work.
No kidding.
Oh yes.
There was two reasons for that. Straight. A lot of those old vehicles, you couldn't keep the lights and the things. The roads are so bad.
Right.
So you try to get up during the summer, at least. You could drive the old ones up there.
Right.
Well, you try to get there before it got too dark.
Right.
And you waited until it got daylight to come home.
How many people would be these Dunster dances, do you think? Was it every weekend, or?
Pretty nearly in the summertime, pretty nearly every weekend. In the wintertime.
About every second week.
Yeah, I guess so. We used to go in the winter sometimes. Lots of times in the winter you didn't go, though.
And how many people would come, do you think, around in the summer?
So? Oh, there must have been 60 of us.
Yeah,
well,
70 of us, maybe.
No kidding.
The hall was always packed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Everybody went to the dance.
And you had a good time.
And everybody, I mean, didn't matter, old, young, children, whatever.
Right.
It was always the table we piled our coats on.
Right.
Was full of babies. You know,
oh, really?
They danced until they couldn't dance anymore, or
sleeping.
They were just
sleeping.
Sure, they always brought the children.
Oh, yeah, the children all came. And
the children came. And
they're still happening now, the dancing?
Oh, yeah.
Still,
the same way.
No kidding,
Everybody
eh?
Goes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the children, too.
Yeah.
And is that Fridays or Saturday nights? Maybe I should.
Well, I don't know how. They don't have them on as a regular. regular basis as we
right.
as we have them.
Used to, yeah.
But the dumpster, oh yeah, the dumpster social has been put back a week this time.
Yeah.
It's not until the 8th, I guess.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Toto, will you shut up?
Toto?
Yeah.
But,
it was a long story with him.
But, we used to, oh yeah, and if there was a wedding dance, it was always on Friday night, and it was always at Dunster too.
Right.
So you went to the Dunster.
That's something.
We went to
John and Liz's wedding dance.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Sure we did.
Right, oh, the Hans, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
there was the wedding dances on the Friday night, and then I worked all day Saturday by myself usually. And then I had Sunday off, so you went to the dance on Friday, and you, better stop those dogs, because they won't be able to hear anything on the tape.
Go on, here.
And so you never got sleep till Sunday night, because Sunday was my day off.
Right. That's it.
And of course, so you went mountain climbing or something
like
on Sunday,
on Sunday.
Aren't going to waste your day off sleeping, are
right,
you?
Right, exactly, this
so,
is it.
So what you did was you worked all day Thursday.
Yeah.
You danced all Friday night. You worked all day Saturday. And you danced Saturday night and you went mountain climbing on Sunday.
Wow. Must have been in great shape then, eh?
I don't do it anymore.
Couldn't stay awake half that long. Even if I'm sitting on...
Couldn't dance anymore either.
Well, say, I guess in the the 50s, where did most people work at the time?
In the mills or for the railway.
Mills
the railways, he supplied a lot of work because it was a divisional point.
Right.
So there was lots of engineers, firemen, brakies, and all lived in McBride.
Right.
And they either worked the area from Jasper to McBride or McBride to Prince George. So they would take a train. Engineer would take the passenger train, the engineers, I think the Jasper, Prince George, but they stopped in McBride.
Okay.
But with freights and a lot of this type of thing, they were slower moving and lots of times more holdups because unlike today, the freight has the right of way. The
right.
passenger has to pull over to the side near Lake Leavitt.
Okay.
Well, nothing got in the way of a passenger train in those days.
Really?
Rates and everything pulled the siding, made sure they were out of the way, and they kept right on going.
Really? No kidding?
The passenger train was priority.
Now, when did the train cease to be such a big, the state, or the CN cease to be such a big employer in McBride? What year was that around?
Oh, right up until...
They were right up until... Well...
Oh, When did they take the roundhouse out?
It must be sometime in the 60s, but...
Yeah, it would be in the 60s.
They didn't take the roundhouse out until well after they introduced
the
diesel Lokis.
Lokis changed in 54, somewhere in there.
They started changing them.
But
they were still pulling steamers through here, I think.
Oh, yeah, they pulled them through... for quite a bit longer than
yeah.
that, but
so you think the diesel?
I think the first ones we saw come through here in 54, I was thinking the first
yeah.
diesels came through.
Yeah. Now, do you think the diesels what changed it, or?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they didn't have to have a roundhouse here. They could keep right on going once they didn't have steamers anymore. The CN used to blow a whistle every morning. They had one
at
7
noon.
O'clock. And at noon.
And at 12 o'clock noon.
You knew when it was 7 o'clock, and then you knew when it was noon, because they blew their whistle.
Wow.
And you could hear it all the way out here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nowadays, I guess most people working in forestry or...
Yeah, forestry employs a lot of people here.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot.
Government employees.
Actually, they're government employees.
They're
government
employees.
A good percentage.
There's a lot of them in forestry.
There's
right.
almost
here.
As many... people, if you take The Forest Service itself.
Oh, you see that big building? They have to fill it with people.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's full.
It really is, eh?
Yeah. There must be 30 people working there, I think.
Okay. Oh, at least that. Oh. 30 people. And then there's all the other highways people and all this type of thing. They all,
there are a lot of employees. When we first came, we didn't have as many highways people. There was no highway.
So there's quite a large, pardon me, quite a few people work for highways then here as well?
Yeah.
Right. And what about, is there many people working out in the bush that live in town?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there is.
What percentage of farmers do you think of the area?
Oh, damn you, Togo.
What percentage is farmers? I don't know.
Small.
They're probably a small percentage.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I would say so.
Okay.
Probably when I came, there was a larger percentage of farmers.
Well, I don't know a much larger percentage, but because most of them...
Well, you take... Lang's place has more farmers, not really anymore.
No.
Ben Mayer.
Nicholson's. Nicholson's.
They're
gone.
All gone. We had when I came, there must have been 10 or 12 dairy farmers. Now we're down to 4.
That's including your Dunster.
Dunsters too.
Wow.
They're likely, any one of them likely producing more milk than the works were, but...
Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah. Well, everybody milked their 10 cows or so, you know,
right.
10 or 12.
Produced the milk.
I mean, we milked, 20, close to 20?
Yeah, we milked 20.
18 to 20 cows.
Jeez.
And Long's did the same. Maybe they had a few more. But nearly everybody had a few cows, you know. Like I said, nearly everybody had 8 or 10 cows.
Right, yeah.
And...
It was kind of a sort of a staple.
That's right. You shipped the milk or the cream.
Right.
See, for years, you shipped cream to the creamery even when you couldn't ship your milk because they'd take it, whether it was sour or anything. Didn't worry about the bacteria counts in those days.
Right, yeah.
They liked it to be not... It had to be kept cool so that it wasn't bad, you know.
Right, yeah.
And you had to look after it, but no, you know, if it was sour, that was fine.
Right.
They could still make butter out of it. I mean, that was...
I could make butter and faster and easier.
It is a little sour. It's true. But today, you know, you can't ship any of that stuff. So.
Right.
I don't know. That's a... Dairying was a staple of the... Of the homesteads, you know, and the farms.
Right.
Well, most everybody would have a few milk cows. They raised some beef.
Right.
And quite a few had a sheep.
Sheep.
You know.
Right.
Pig.
His grandfather shipped a carload of lambs one year to Vancouver.
Oh, no kidding.
It was in, what year was that? I was going to say it was. It was in the early 30s, either
late 20s, I think.
Late 20s, maybe. I guess it was the late 20s, yeah. Huh. 28, maybe. And he went with them and sold them to Pat Burns.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, when you worked in the mill, or in the mills, or you fell to, how long would it take you to get out to work? Or?
Well, most of the... See, when I worked in the mills, that was one of the things. We worked in a mill where we could go and spend, like,
they had a camp.
Right.
And you stayed right there.
You stayed in the camp, yeah.
Okay. Now, once we got so we had a road and whatnot, I never was overly thunderstruck about working in mills anyway.
Right.
And so...
Rather be a farmer?
I'd rather be a farmer or work in the bush.
Right.
Mills were never one of my cups of tea. I worked done just about every job that was there, but
right.
I did them because... And then they started in...
Did you prefer falling as well?
Actually, falling was the big money.
Right.
I don't say I liked it.
Right.
I did it because it was the biggest money I could make.
Right, yeah.
And actually fell for apparently 17 winters.
Wow. 17 winters?
Winters, yeah.
Right.
So I did a lot of that. But in between that and doing other things, I drove cab. And then later years, I worked as a cleanup man, like go over. It was the job that everybody, you're the guy that all the skidder operators hate.
Right.
You go around, tie ribbons on the trees they leave behind, and you have to go back and get them.
Oh, no kidding. Right, yeah.
Well, you're the most popular guy there, kind of stuff. Well, you became fairly popular with the Forest Service and the boss, but that was the only one.
That's about it. Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
But I'd had enough experience. Like, I'd driven cats long enough that... And then that I always filled in as a cat driver. Like, if one of them was sick, or like in the case of a couple of cat drivers that did a lot of work around the country, they were Seventh-day Adventists.
Right.
So from noon Friday and all day Saturday, they were gone. Well,
right.
I would take over. He got ready to go home at noon.
Right.
I got on the cat, finished his day off, worked it on Saturday.
Right.
And then, depending whether that he would come up and go back work on it on Sunday. And the cat works 7 days a week.
Huh.
this type of thing. And then, of course, I relieved. And my last bush work amount to anything, I was strictly, all I did was drive cat.
Right.
As I used to say, I can climb mountains with the average as long as I got tracks underneath me.
No, this may sound like a stupid question. This is just out of my own curiosity, purely. When you're falling trees in the wintertime, how did you get around in the snow?
Way up to your belly or use snowshoes.
Really? Okay, that's how you did it, eh? I wondered.
Yeah.
So you, what was your choice then?
Well, depending on your snow conditions.
Right.
And of course, my falling was all done before they went into the clear cut.
Oh, okay.
And it was, you see, we had a... Well, we started out with a 16-inch stump limit.
Right.
And anything above 16 inches, we could fall.
Right.
Then they moved it down to a 12-inch stump limit. And a few years after that, they decided to go clear cut.
Oh, okay.
And that's everything right down to an 8-inch stump.
I see. Okay. So 18-inch limit was the biggest or the...
Smallest you could fall.
Smallest you could fall. Oh, I see. Okay.
And there's quite a difference between that. It's far more dangerous than falling in clear cut. Clear cut, once you get a hole opened up in front of you,
there's
nothing to worry about out there.
Right.
All you gotta do is make sure you're not falling the tree past a tree, and there's not much danger of any limbs flying back and hitting you or anything like that. But when you're dumping it down, of course, they wanted spruce trees.
Right.
Lambing mills wouldn't even take a balsam if they seen it coming.
Right.
So it had to be a spruce as far as they were concerned. So you left them standing.
Right.
You fall a tree down past another tree.
Right.
A limb breaks off and as that tree bends over and then throws the limbs back to you.
Oh, no kidding.
Well, far more dangerous. As
right.
These guys that are advocating today selective logging and one thing or another.
Right.
I think need to take a closer look at it.
Right.
Now, it's just my opinion, but
right.
when you get in there, if you damage the roots,
right,
you get a red butt rot.
Okay.
Immediately, within, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, the first 10 feet of that tree won't be any good, and that's the best part of the tree.
Okay.
The other thing is the danger.
Right.
And the falling.
This is for selective logging, yeah.
But selective logging.
Right, yeah.
You increase the danger. Now, heli logging and selective logging, all you've got to worry about is getting it down, and it isn't going to be skidded, drug, or anything anywhere anyway.
Right.
It's going to go straight airborne.
Right.
That may be the route to go. I don't know that much about
it. It's still dangerous for the faller.
It's still dangerous for the faller.
Right.
Yeah. Because he's got to pick his... And, of course, it wouldn't be quite as dangerous because all he has to do is pick a place to get it now with heli logging.
Right.
Because they don't, they pick it up at the butt end or wherever they pick it up from.
Right, right.
And it goes. But when it's going to be skidded out, it's got to have its top headed to the trail or to wherever they can get it out.
I gotcha, right, yeah.
And so now you got a tree, you got like that, and a tree standing here.
Right.
Your trail laying out there, this tree has got to go through between these two.
Right, I gotcha, yeah.
All right.
Jeez. Better be good at it then, eh?
You not only got to be good.
Yeah.
Or else you'll be hung up in this one or this one.
Right.
Or it'll break this one or this one down.
Right.
Or but when it goes through, even if you're good, limbs come off this tree, limbs come off this tree,
right,
and limbs come off this tree, and when these trees swing back, pop it back, they throw the limbs back right back here.
Right, I gotcha.
And so I think that a lot of these people that are looking at this selective log, you need to look at it more thoroughly than they've looked at it.
Right, right, okay.
I would say maybe small clear cuts is a better bet, or...
Right.
Something else.
Something else, right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess on a different note, what were the pleasant aspects of living in McBride? For either one of you.
It's a wonderful place to live.
Right.
It's not a lot of people. Scenery is beyond expectation.
Exactly, that's for sure.
The weather is never really bad as the rest of the world seems to get.
Right, yeah.
Of course, the place where we live, we don't flood.
Right.
Because we're well up above the floodplain.
I was gonna say, yeah.
There's places in McBride, it does, like in the valley, that
I can imagine.
Flood.
Yeah.
In high water, but it's something that we don't have to worry about. Wonderful place to raise children.
Right.
Lots of freedom.
Right.
If you like the out of doors, as all of us did,
yeah,
and I think that the water is good. I mean, we have our own water, and we don't have to worry about having any. It's all off the mountains, all from snow or springs on the mountains above us. So
it's good to add some today.
The water is wonderful.
Right. Yeah.
We have wonderful neighbors.
Right.
Because
everyone gets along.
It seems like, oh yes.
Right.
Living in a small community, you may have your differences over something, but if something happens, everybody pulls together.
Right.
You know, that's small community living.
Yeah.
Which is really nice.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, are there any negative aspects? Doesn't sound like it.
Well, not for me, I don't suppose there is. For some people, yes, you don't see any of the city highlights, or, you know, you're not going to go to theater or
right, yeah,
any of those kind of things. If you like the big shows that come, you're not going to probably get to them from
right,
here.
Yeah.
Certainly a few years ago, you wouldn't have. But no, for me, I don't think there is any really negative aspects.
Right. Now, is there much, do you see much separation or in the earlier days between rich and poor people, or?
No, we were all on the same level, we were all poor.
Right.
Pretty well, and even the ones that had a few dollars, most of them, you...
Didn't show it off?
They didn't show it.
It doesn't make any difference. There's no, I don't think there's any real class difference here.
Good.
And even today I don't see it.
No.
No.
You know.
Yeah, you take people that we know darn good and well, are fairly well to do.
Right.
You quite often find that even with the people, that contractors, you know, that you go out and work for.
Right.
And you know he's got maybe, well, $1 million worth of equipment.
Right.
And you can tell by the house he's living in and the pickup he drives that he's not cash strapped by any means.
Right.
You may well go out on the job and find him down there with a shovel and down up to his knees cleaning out the end of a culvert.
Right. Right, I see what you're saying, yeah.
This is pretty much the case with with the people who lived here.
In this area, yeah.
In this area. But yeah. I think it's, you know, The only people that I've seen that were people in, like, well, Ziedler's over here, I know they had a woods manager come in one time when he would drive out and look at the roads,
right.
But he wouldn't stop and talk to anybody, any of the guys working along the way.
Oh.
Now, it was a position thing with him more than a
right.
financial thing.
So he was more of an exception to the rule, sort of.
Oh, much yeah. exception to the rule.
Right. Yeah.
And because most of them would, I know the one fellow that we had would, if he come out there and. You come out there and you were doing something that looked like you needed a hand. He was right out there. You were right up to his knees in it. It's just like the rest, you know?
Right. Now, as far as things like race or ethnicity, was everyone a real difference in the community or...
With races?
Yeah, like, was there ever a big, Native population here?
No, there's never been a big Native population. There's never been a big population of anything, I guess, besides the whites here.
Right.
I do think they do have some problems in this girl. Like, we have a neighbor down the road who has an adopted Native girl, and I know she has had some difficulty at school.
Hmm.
I don't know how we've had a number of East Indian families here. I don't know just how they have found it.
Right.
Sometimes I think it's probably been difficult for some of them too.
Right.
On the whole, I don't think that it's a, it is a problem probably with some people.
Right.
For ourselves, no.
No.
It's never been a problem.
No.
It doesn't make it. They're either good people or they're not.
Right.
They're either neighborly or they're not friendly, and it doesn't really matter what color their skin is.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah,
was
we have a large Italian community here.
Oh, there is.
That came in after the war.
Right.
And they've certainly become part of McBride, and
right.
I don't know that anybody pays any attention to it or ever did.
Right.
I suppose when they first
when
came.
When they first came,
when
I
they
think
first
so.
Came, I'm sure it was difficult for them.
Yeah, well, a lot
because
of them
they didn't speak English and stuff like that, and so
yeah.
it was probably.
But once
the children got into school, and could speak the language, and they would pick it up more and everything, and
yeah, just easier to fit in once you.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah,
and
but they're very friendly people. They're very nice people. And
right. Yeah.
There's.
The only thing I ever remember going to races is, I drove cat for a fellow and. And he had it hired out to an extra gang on the CN.
Right.
And they used to pick us up here in McBride on Monday morning about 6 o'clock. And we'd go for the weekend by Saturday afternoon. There was an extra gang stationed here.
Right.
They'd be back for the weekend. They'd get back here about, well, sometimes early Saturday morning even.
Right.
And we'd unload the cat and go from there. And that's the only dealings I ever had with, to amount to anything, with multiracial. And there was everything on those extra gangs, from soup to nuts, I'll tell you.
Right.
And I think that, well, there was times, I think that the foreman and I were the only ones there that spoke English, but...
Right.
Here's the way it goes.
Right,
and
yeah.
The only, I'll have to tell you, the only time I ever was really upset with somebody racial was... We had a planer mill in here, and we had three French-Canadian fellows come in
right.
to work. Two of them were really good workers.
Right.
They did seemingly nice guys, really good workers.
Right.
But they seemingly couldn't speak English.
Right.
The third one was lazier than a cut puppy.
Right.
But he spoke English, and they worked all winter there, and, you know, They were fine, didn't have any trouble along the way. But the next year, because spring they shut down and a lot of the guys dispersed in different directions. And it was in May or June, such a matter, as young fellows would, you could, by this time, it was about a 3-hour drive, but if you had a pretty good vehicle, you could drive to Jasper.
Right.
Well, if you drive to Jasper,
the road was good.
If the road was good, yeah. And there was about three or four of us young guys, of course. We thought we'd go up and see what the girls looked like in Jasper.
Right.
It's understandable, I guess.
Yeah.
And because as you know, when you're that age, well, there's only one thing on your mind. So we went up there. And if I don't, walking down the street in Jasper, if I don't meet one of these two fellows that I worked with all winter,
right,
that didn't, seemingly didn't speak English.
Right.
And he started talking to me in English. And I said, come to find out, he spoke English all the time.
Right.
And he did, and why they did this, and you know, he had a job as an interpreter for one of the hotels up there.
Oh, no kidding.
And he was getting paid good money because he could speak both English, and yet he, from November
right.
until the middle of April,
right.
he worked in a mill down here and refused to speak English.
Wow.
And you know, I have a hard time when to worry about the French language anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Now, but I shouldn't be that way, I know, but I have a hard
time.
Oh,
yeah, but then we had Baptiste.
Oh, yeah, we had Baptiste.
And he was French.
Yeah.
He was actually from France.
Right, oh, yeah.
But he did not speak English at all well. It was really hard to understand him, really, really hard. But you couldn't dislike him.
I mean,
you couldn't understand him, and he did everything his own way.
He fit in there.
Oh, yeah. Baptiste was quite a character.
Yeah.
Oh, we had a donkey, eh? And, he saw this donkey. Well, he just loved this donkey, eh? Could he
right.
bring his children out? We finally understood that he wanted to bring his children out.
Right.
To show them this donkey. So I said, sure, he could bring them out. Well, he was thrilled with the donkey, but the
right.
children did not want to see the donkey. They were scared spitless of the donkey.
No kidding. Oh, jeez.
I said, did they want to ride it? No, he wanted them to ride it, but they didn't. They were having nothing to do with it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was something he's dealt with a lot of
times. Oh, yeah,
yeah.
It was something. He was so pleased to see one because they'd had them in
he
France.
Used them.
Eh?
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
wanted his children to appreciate donkeys, and they did not. They had never seen right. a donkey before, and they didn't want to.
Didn't hope to see one.
I guess, was there many women that worked outside the home, say, when you first came here, or throughout the years? Or?
Oh, yes. The women worked out, probably. I mean, all the clerks and the grocery stores were often women,
right?
You know, and of course there was the nurses. Everybody at the hospital, except the groundskeeper, were women,
right?
And a lot of the women worked in the camps in the mills.
That oh, they was, did.
Oh yeah.
Oh, in some.
That was usually usually run by the women.
The cook camps.
The cook camp, the cook and
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, where are you, the women?
I mean, in the Lambing Mills, it was all women in the cookhouse.
Yeah.
All the wives worked in the cookhouse, and the men worked in the mill. This kind of thing. Oh yeah.
Were there many, I guess, single parent families in the community at all then?
No, not
no.
very many.
No.
No, we were just about all
yeah.
couples. I can't think of. There was one girl who had lost her husband. She was raising a small child when I first came. I can remember she worked out.
That's a phenomenon that...
Yeah, most of them, it didn't matter how tough it was. The women stuck it out, eh?
Right, right.
You got married and had a family, you stuck it out, no matter what kind of a life it was.
Right.
Some of them would have a lot to do with it.
Some of them had, you know, some of them had it really tough.
Right.
Like I remember one woman, she drove herself into the hospital. She'd been chopping wood, and she'd almost cut her thumb totally off.
Wow.
And she had four small children, I think it was, and she loaded the children up and drove in 20 miles to have the doctor sew her thumb back on.
Holy jeez.
I mean, these are the kinds of things that women did. I mean, their
right.
husbands weren't home. They were all alone. Often their husbands were out in the bush.
Right.
They were alone for weeks, you know.
Wow.
They ran the farm and did whatever they had to do and raised raise the children. And
busy life.
Yeah, they had a busy life. Yeah. And they had to be very, you know,
Well, there's lots
you
of
had
things.
To be able to do everything. There was no phones or anything, right. So...
Was there a place where, like, women could get together? Like, or was there women's groups at the time, or...?
Women's Institute.
Right, okay.
There was the Women's Institute, where the women, the farm women all
and then there
together.
And then there had been the Royal Purple.
What's the Royal Purple?
You know, the Elks.
Yeah.
You're familiar with the Elks?
Yeah.
Well, it's the female side of the Elks.
Oh, I see, okay. Right.
And here, their group has become so small right now, they are banded together, but...
Right.
I mean, they're still...
As far as men's groups?
Well, other than
the Elks and the Farmers Institute.
Right. Right.
And that was about it. There was there was a Lions Club here for a while.
Oh yeah.
Right. Oh, there was a Lions Club, okay.
Yeah. They don't exist anymore.
There's a Legion.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, we're putting a list together of other people. Do you have anybody else we could call on that you know of, or?
Other people. Somebody that would have a different aspect of the valley.
Right.
I think Grunewald's moved here after the war.
Yeah, we.
You did them.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they would certainly have a...
different aspect, yeah.
Yeah. Who else?
Well,
even people you know in Tijon and or Belmont. We don't have a lot of people from that area yet, so I... Or this area's fine, too, as well.
McCurdy's in Belmont. Have you got any of the McCurdy's?
No. How do you spell that one?
Oh, M-C.
Right.
Capital K-I-R-D-Y.
Okay. McCurdy.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, I guess Jim McCurdy is probably the oldest there, right?
I think so.
Right.
They'd be the Blackman brothers.
Blackman brothers?
Their family's been here for
a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time, that family's been here.
Yeah. In McBride, or?
No, they're Belmont.
Belmont.
Tijon area.
Tijon.
They're Belmont now.
Okay.
And, of course, there's Davis.
Vern Davis.
And he'll be Tijon Belmont.
Tijon Belmont? Okay.
Yeah.
And his family's been around the country in that area and down this way and whatnot.
Okay.
Ever since Christ was a puppy dog. Mm-hmm.
One question I meant to ask, I changed the topic quite fast. Who was Baptiste? How did he... I'm curious. I probably should wait for the tape.
How he got here, I have no idea. But
right.
Somewhere along the line, he emigrated and he got here somewhere in the... must have been in the 70s.
Right.
That he was here.
Right.
And he stayed here for several years. I don't know where he went when he left or anything else, but he must have been here for 3 or 4 years. Oh. He worked in the bush.
Okay.
He fell...
He was a faller.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how he found his way to McBride, I don't know.
Now, is there anything else you'd like to tell me about? Anything you, whether it's good, bad, or happy, or anything you think that should go on tape, or?
Gracious, I don't know.
Or, is there anything you'd like to ask me?
Well...
hopefully I can answer.
No, I can't think of anything else. We covered a lot of stuff tonight.
I'll turn this off. But thanks very much.
You're welcome.
All right. As an afterthought here, Mrs. Marsh is going to tell us about the sheep grazing.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right. We went sheep grazing for 5 years, I guess it was.
Right.
And we grazed out the... east twin for a while, and then we went up the south door.
Right.
And that was, we had 1,000 head of sheep. which we took out every spring for about 3 months, 4 months, and grazed them to take down the fireweed in the spruce trees, and so they would, the trees would grow.
Right, okay.
And the south door was one of the prettiest places that I went with the sheep for grazing.
Right. Now, does the government still do this?
Yep.
Yes, they do it in places, and a lot of the logging companies do it too.
Right.
There's been sheep grazing right up until this year in the valley here.
Right.
But I don't think there's anyone in here this year.
How come? You know?
I don't know for sure why there is none in here, but the forestry hasn't done it now for two years in here, I think it is.
They haven't? Okay.
No. Good enough?
Sure.